When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We're talking
about body swapping,
to boy, to white, and back again.
Welcome to the Swapcast podcast, the world's only podcast dedicated to body swap movies. I'm your host, Paul Mitzi, and with me we have
Lucy Thomas
and
Brendan Levi.
And joining us once again, we have one of the hosts of the fantastic Hunting Seasons podcast,
Broderick Gordis.
In today's episode, we'll be breaking down the 2022 Pixar animated comedy Turning Red, starring Sandra Oh, Jordan Fisher, Phineas O'Connor, James Hong, and Rosalie Chang, where thanks to an ancient curse, a 13-year-old girl starts turning into a giant red panda every time she gets excited. But before we get into that, just a reminder that we absolutely love hearing from our listeners and we welcome film suggestions for future episodes. So please reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram, send us an email at theswapcastpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to support our show, reviewing us is the best way possible. So to say thank you, if we reach 100 star ratings on iTunes and Spotify, we will finally fulfill our fans' most common request to review Faces. So, on to Turning Red. This is the latest Pixar film to have its theatrical release cancelled and be put straight onto Disney+. Did it deserve this fate, or does it join fellow Pixar body swap soul as another casualty in Disney's mistreatment of Pixar? I'll go over to our resident Pixar expert, Brod.
Oh, you. I'll take that claim. Yeah. Did it deserve to be shoved onto Disney Plus? Abso-fucking-lutely not. Are we allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yes.
Oh, fucking course.
No. Excellent.
Yeah. I was just planning to say cunt over and over again for the last 10 minutes of the podcast.
Fantastic. If that's directed at Disney for putting it on the streaming service only, you're welcome to. All right. I'm going to start and say something super lame here. You know how sometimes you can go into or watch a movie and you wonder whether your mood affected how you felt about it? Like you go, I didn't really like that. Everyone else seems to have loved it. Why didn't I like it? Maybe I was just in a weird mood. This stuff was going on. I had a very emotional weekend. Good emotions, but a very emotional weekend. Mm-hmm. And I sat down to watch this movie. And within about 30 seconds, I was crying with joy because I loved how well executed it was straight away. And if you want to talk about a reason for this to be on the big screen, it looks amazing. It has some incredible visuals. Yeah. And the soundtrack is so fucking good. Mm-hmm. I'm livid I couldn't see this in a cinema. Absolutely fucking livid I can't see this in a cinema. I was lucky enough to be at home by myself. I have a nice TV. I was able to have, like, it was just me and a glass of wine and this TV and my TV and, like, the sound up loud, and it was great. But fuck, this would have been great in a cinema. I'm really upset with Disney about this one.
Yeah.
And why did they do that to it? Was it a COVID thing?
It can't be anymore. They had Encanto in the cinemas, the Batman's in the cinemas at the same time.
Ryan the Last Dragon and Encanto, the last two Disney movies were at cinema released.
In Australia?
All over the world.
Yeah.
And then the last four Pixar movies were all put straight to Disney+.
Brutal.
So it's like they have a grudge against Pixar right now.
I thought it would be their moneymaker, no?
Well, it always was. Like, you put a Pixar movie in the cinema, it was always a guaranteed money-making hit.
My theory is that they are trying to coerce Pixar into making more sequels to existing properties. Like, it's like, oh, you guarantee you that Buzz Lightyear film that's coming out later this year will be in cinemas. Because they know they'll make money because Toy Story is a recognizable brand. For some reason, they look at Turning Red or Soul and they go, just not sure that's got an audience for some reason. It's not tracking that it's going to make a lot of money at the cinemas. and then they put it on Disney Plus. Or, yeah, I've there's some back-end contract thing where they don't have to pay Pixar as much if it doesn't make a box office, like, earnings or something like that. I've got no idea. It's gross, though. I hate it.
Yeah. Well, there's been, like, a lot of controversy this week because there's, like, a Florida... a bill that's just been passed in Florida about, like, not teaching, like, gay things in schools. Don't say gay. And, like, Disney has been...
That's what it's called.
Disney...
Don't say gay things in school.
Say gay bill. So you can't, like...
You can't mention being
gay. That's the gayest bill I've ever heard of.
So nothing in fiction. Like, you can't... Yeah. There can't be gay characters in books or...
Disappointed you, Brandon.
So anyway... Then people are like, hey, wait a second, Disney are actually, like, giving money to the politicians that are passing this, yet they're all, like, pro-gay whatever. So, like, then all these protests started happening, and eventually now Disney have finally pulled their funding of these politicians. But in the lead-up to that, all the employees of Pixar released a letter saying that Disney has been actively removing gay content from all their scripts. Whoa. And that all these movies that were supposed to have gay content in them, once they get through the Disney machine, all that shit's taken out. So, like, it seems like there's definitely something happening between the two arms of the company that's not gelling right now.
Mm-hmm. The Disney Wars.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to know, Paul, what did you think of this movie? And also, Brendan.
Well, I really love this movie.
Okay,
and
interesting.
And it's funny, like, after that conversation we just had, I'm really surprised at some of the stuff that made it through the Disney machine.
Completely.
I think this is very, like, probably the most adult skewing Pixar movie ever in terms of, like, mentioning periods and that kind of thing. You would have never had that in any of the other films. There might have been ones with more mature tones to them.
I was going to say, Soul, to me, I still would argue Soul isn't a film for adults film. That kids can enjoy. But in terms of that sort of content that, you know, wouldn't have traditionally been a kid's film or a family film, I agree,
Yeah, this is definitely the horniest Pixar movie ever made.
Yeah, May was thirsty, yeah.
Yeah. So I had a lot of fun with it. I thought... The music, I wasn't as hot on it as what Broad was.
I can't stop listening to the soundtrack.
I liked the music. I also cried in this movie, and I feel like the music really, really helped.
Thank you, Lucy. I'm not the only loser here. That's good.
I think the score was beautiful, but I think the boy band songs, they were written by Billie Eilish and her brother, and I think they really feel like they were written by someone who didn't live in that era, because they sounded more like 90s boy band songs than 2002 when this film was released. I don't know if that's a gripe that
I don't know if I could tell the difference.
Yeah, I think that crossover in the 90s, it's like how the 70s and the 80s, it's like they're not just defined by the exact 10 years. There's definitely completely 90s boy bands that went into 2002. Yes.
Yeah.
That's definitely, they showed they had an Australian tour in 1999. Yeah, exactly. Had an Australian tour in 1999. These guys started in the 90s. They'll continue on into the early 2000s. That's Four Town.
Okay. But, yeah. I love the animation style. I think it doesn't look like the other Pixar movies. Mm-hmm. It's definitely got, like, a really more of a cartoony look to it and much more of an anime look for it. This movie is about a Chinese-Canadian, but it really is heavily influenced by Japanese anime and Japanese culture.
Yeah, definitely got that.
Sailor Moon, I don't know if you guys recognized the sort of the color palette and almost like the watercolored backgrounds are very Sailor Moon. Pinks and purples, and sort of there's a certain like fuzziness to them that's extremely Sailor Moon.
And there's a lot of Miyazaki in this. Mm-hmm. Like,
I mean, the panda on its own is very Miyazaki.
Yeah. It looked just like something out of Pompoko or Totoro. Mm-hmm. And the colors were just like, it looked like an anime, which I love that. So I had a lot of fun watching this film. I thought it was really, really cool. And like, as with all Pixar films, I thought the emotional stuff really worked. So, I loved it overall.
And I just cannot express how it just like fuels my fire knowing how mad the Karen mums are. Like, mm-hmm. it just yeah. gives me chills of how much I love it.
Angry about what?
On my lunch break today, I was just reading some stuff online, and there is just so much anger from mums being like, this children should not be able to watch this movie. And this mum was like, you know, my kids know where babies come from, and like, we don't shy away from this sort of stuff. But having to explain what a period is to my young boy, like, I wasn't ready for that on a Friday night. It's like, if your kids know where babies come from, they should know what a fucking period is.
They missed the chapter
and it's
there.
Like, and it's like, don't try to be chill, mum. Like, you're like, my kids know where babies come from, but periods, it's like, you have a period. Like, get over it. And just, yeah. And
it's also never said explicitly really that much anyway. It's like, if you don't know what pads are. It's like, you know what pads are. You're not going to go, mom, what's pads? And then have it, like, either you have the conversation or divert them to something else. They'll keep watching the movie. They'll be distracted in 10
seconds. Yeah, and like I said, I just love when those women are angry and just it's so misguided and they're total losers, and I just love it. It's just, I feel happy.
I didn't do any research this week. I did some, but
I can't wait.
I do have a question.
I can't wait for the reviews. I'm sure Paul found like Christian mums going, oh my God, like improper thoughts. Now,
is a red panda like colloquial for your period?
It is now.
It is now turning red?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing. That's cool.
And really, like, the amount of GMO like foods that we're feeding our children, they're all getting their periods at 5 anyway. Like, a period is like a kid's thing now anyway. So, but yeah, Brendan, what did you think of the film?
Oh, like, this film, like I said, I did a lot of research afterwards because I was just like, I need to prepare myself because I'm going to be with Paul, Broad, Lucy, and I'm going to tell them, I thought it was all right. I had to mentally prepare myself because I know I'm going to be like flogged verbally by you guys.
I knew there'd be one. Whole show I now. Knew someone wouldn't like it.
The thing is with Brendan is that we've established this before. His inner child is dead. Like, all that joy, the childhood joy has been zapped out of him.
Because, well, maybe that's true. I don't know. I feel mean saying that. But Brendan loves a coming-of-age tale, like a young person finding themselves.
No, he only likes coming-of-age tales if they're about a depressed
white guy
that doesn't know his place in the world and is flummoxed by the fact that all the women in his life are frustrated by the fact that he can't fucking get off his ass and do anything useful with his life.
See, this is what I was talking about when I'm like, I had to prepare for this podcast because I knew I'd just get flogged with bullshit.
Well,
here's my chance to tear it apart.
Shower us with all this, knowledge that you got in your research.
Yeah, go on.
I didn't do any research.
Go on. You're with the Karen mums. You're on the wrong side of history.
I liked that they talked about periods and stuff. That was cool. It was my favorite bit. I don't know.
You liked it?
But it felt like a Pixar film. Like, I haven't really been like, I guess since Soul, which is more recent, I guess, but for me, I don't know. I know Paul has like this affinity for Pixar, and I guess Brod's holding his hand up to.
No, that's me because I want to comment in a second. But go on.
I'm sorry. I don't have the same response as you.
I'm going to defend you for a second, Brendan. Like I did in the Soul review. Actually, I was listening back to that yesterday. I've tried to find people. I've asked everyone around me basically if you watch Turning Red. If you watch Turning Red. Because I want to gush about it with somebody, and no one else seems to be nearly as hot on it as I am. Like, everyone I've spoken to has been like, yeah, it was all right. just like you. So you're not alone, that's for sure. I'm glad to hear that Lucy and Paul might be on my side here, which is nice because I've fucking finally found someone to talk to. However, did you say Soul was the last movie you're excited about? Because you were by far the coolest on that film when we reviewed it as well.
Like, for Soul, it was because it like was horribly like looking into my deepest fears for 2 hours or however long that thing tracks. But you know, like Up is a beautiful story, and I guess it's about guys. Oh no, I'm proving you guys wrong. I'm running away.
this is my favorite Pixar movie since Toy Story 3. It's just 12 years ago. I absolutely love. I've immediately started rewatching it as soon as I finished, and I've sort of filtered through it a couple of times already. Yeah, really, really loved it.
Yeah, I'm keen to rewatch this film.
I thought it was hilarious. Like this also helped. Just before watching it, I watched 2 minutes of How I Met Your Father, and then I watched the first episode of Upload Season 2 and didn't get a single laugh. And within the first 5 minutes of watching Turning Red, I had chuckled at least half a dozen times and continued to throughout the rest of the movie. Like, it's a very, very funny film.
I didn't laugh in How I Met Your Father either, but I just, like, reached for the warm blanket that is that format and, like, wrapped it around myself and was like, oh, I'm safe in here.
That's fair.
I was the same. I have to agree. I didn't laugh in How I Met Your Father. I mean, this isn't a How I Met Your Father review, but
comes to see that one day.
But and I did laugh in this film. I thought it was funny, and yeah, and it's just so energetic as well.
Yeah.
You can't help but getting like swept up in it, especially at the beginning. It's just like so fast paced. It's like in your face.
I just don't have any criticisms for it. It's like it's paced perfectly. Its sense of humor is like right there for me. Its message is fantastic. I love all the characters that are in it. There were no down moments where I was bored or anything like that. It crescendos in an incredible way. So that looks great. The music's great. It's a home run for me. I don't have anything that didn't work for me in the entire film.
Yeah. Like when you kind of start realizing where the plot's going to go, I thought it was going to be like a case of her. She's going to try to live her life at school and then have to hide turning into the panda. And it's going to be that for the whole film.
Yep.
But it turned out to be something completely different. And I really appreciated that. Mm. And it's not necessarily where I thought it was going to go. So
do you want to do the plot, or are we like way too far gone?
Yeah, you guys got to remember, just because Bro's on here doesn't mean we have to, like, raise the bar of this podcast. It's still about talking about how hot people are and dick and fart jokes.
No, I got a lot of things. I've got a Stephen King quote here. Like, I've got a lot to say. So we need to, like, do the formalities and then I want to dig into the themes.
I have to say, I didn't take a whole lot of notes in this film because I was just so, like, wrapped up in it.
I'm not far behind you.
I didn't write a lot while I was watching it, but then afterwards I really, like, had a lot of thinking.
I didn't either,
Oh, because Brendan never does. I was swept up in it.
No, I write notes. There was nothing, like, offensive for me to be like, what the fuck? I've actually only got one note. It was absent father.
So let's do the 30-second plot summary.
Ready, set, go.
All right, so it's about May. She is a girl. When she turns 13, she starts turning into a red panda whenever she's excited. And when her mum finds out, she lets her know it's due to a family curse. The mum wants her to stay home, but the girl starts using it to earn money to go see a boy band with her friends. But then when the mum finds out, she wants her to do this thing that will stop her from turning into the panda. And then in the end, they turn into giant cages. Oh.
I think the word you're looking for is ritual. She wants her to do this thing.
I got through most of it.
Not
I think,
bad, not bad. Yeah, you got to the third act.
Yeah. So get us started, Lucy. What was in your notes?
Oh, I just loved, like, it touched on a lot of things. And I always do this, but, like, as a parent, there was just so much going on that I really loved. I just loved the way, like, the mum was flawed, but, like, they kind of worked through that and they, like, sort of healed, like, generational, like, mistakes, and, like, there was lots of growth. And I just loved the way, you know, the Stephen King quote I wrote down is from Stand By Me, and it's like, I never had friends later on like the ones I had when I was 12. Jesus, did anyone? just like the way those girls just like are ride or die. I just remember being that age and having friends like that. And yeah, I just loved that part of it.
So there was a kind of a Twitter war that happened this week because one of the reviews that came out for the film.
I was going to bring this up, yeah.
Yeah, the reviewer said that Pixar are doing this thing now where they're using really specific voices for their films that alienates everyone else. And he was kind of suggesting, but because this film is about a Asian Canadian 13-year-old girl, that no one else in the world's going to be able to relate to the story.
Was it a man?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Have you no, like, ability to think about the interior life of anyone else other than yourself? Like,
Lucy,
you can't find that fucking interesting?
He can relate to toys and fish and monsters and cars, but not a fucking 13-year-old girl. Impossible.
Rage.
Yeah, I always find that argument just so when a world is full of stories about men doing things,
yeah.
And you're like, we can't have stories about women doing things because, like, how will I relate? It's like, well, if that's what you truly believe, then you're like, you're saying that there's nothing out there for women. Whereas for me, I'm like women have been watching movies and they've been able to relate to things, but it is good to get a different perspective. And a perspective that is still universal. It
yes.
can just come from a woman's
like
voice.
The
that's
way
okay.
I just yeah. like thought, like I drew like a correlation with Stand By Me, which is about a bunch mm-hmm. of horny like teenage
exactly,
like,
yeah.
boys on the cusp of puberty. And it made me think of that. And, you know, that was about
but
boys.
But you get even a different perspective and a richer one because you get to get it from another
completely.
Another culture, another yeah. space that you've never experienced, and you can see it from another.
And it's like, isn't it nice to learn about like the world? Like, I don't want to only hear my own stories.
That's- Surely that's what art is, right? Art is like mm-hmm. an empathy machine. It's how you learn and experience other people's lives, so you get perspectives on other people's stories and experiences.
Yeah, like boys could watch this and be like, oh, I can also like relate to my friends without like calling each other dickheads and stuff.
Yeah.
Like we could actually be really encouraging to each other.
Well, I was saying I was crying early on this film. This is my embarrassing admission. I tend to do this when I see like positive representation in stuff that's never been seen before. So like the famous one for me was I sobbed like a fucking baby at the end of The Legend of Korra when I'd never seen an animated kids film that had two women as a love interest. And that's how that show ended. And people wanted it. People really craved this to happen. They never thought the show would go there. And they actually did it. It was really, really cool. And this, for me, it was like one of the scenes was the one where she was doing her like fan art of Devon or whatever. And like this idea of like female desire in a teenager is just not something you've ever seen in an animated film before, let alone a Disney film before. And I was like, that's fucking cool.
Somebody
that's so
animated
fucking cool.
pads and tampons. Like,
yeah,
that
exactly.
is out of this world.
And like, it was mortifying when May's mum was like driving her to the fucking convenience store. And like, I felt all
that,
of that. Like, that was
I hit,
horrifying.
That hit me hard.
Oh.
Yeah, I knew exactly what she was feeling.
Yeah.
The bit where she took her to the convenience store and then the bit where she went to school with the pads.
Oh.
I just wanted to jump in the screen.
I don't
and
know
how
they reconciled at the end.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That was the most brutal thing that a kid could experience.
Well, and I think it goes to that cultural specificity because, like, in I think a film, if it was a white protagonist, the scene after she took her to this convenience store would have been a very different outcome.
Sure.
But she was kind of, like, more worried about – she was – more internalizing the guilt herself.
Yeah.
She's like, this is my fault. And she was wanting forgiveness from her mother rather than it's like, my mum's a fucking bitch. I can't believe she did this to me.
She literally slaps herself at one point, which I thought was quite visceral. And I know it's something that people can do, particularly when they're very anxious and all those sorts of things, having a panic attack and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But that hit me, how like affecting this was for her. It's literally the first time she's like, had this, like, she craves her mum's approval. Mm. It's the whole point of the film. And, like, she takes it on herself like it was her fault. Next day, wakes up as a red panda. What a brilliant, fucking, it's a beautiful film. I love it.
Yeah.
Is it a fever? A stomach ache? Chills? Constipation?
No!
Wait, is it that? Did the red peony bloom?
No! Maybe?
But it's too soon. Don't worry, Maymay. I'll get everything you need.
Mommy's here. Jin! Jin! It's happening!
Did either of you guys, Brendan or Lucy, watch this with your like partners? Or Lucy, did you try to show this to Otis?
Yeah, but he was very like into building like with his Duplo. So it was not
just
so
much. Another fucking man who can't relate to a woman's story.
Katrina played with her Duplo. As well.
Speaking of this as a kids' film, the nightmare sequence, I could definitely see some kids being traumatized for life after
That's
that.
Fine. I've talked about this before. I was traumatized watching like Return to Oz and shit when I was a kid. It's a normal part of growing up. You can have a 30-second traumatizing dream scene. It's fine. With a snake that's been cut in half and a weird donkey and the boy band fish. Flower things and the fish man dying. Yeah, it was great.
I used to live with this chick who told me that her mum let her watch Pulp Fiction when she was 9. I'm like, I saw that movie in like maybe when I was 16 and it fully did a number on me at that age. Like I kept on thinking about that GIMP thing and just like, I was like, that's real
bad. Yeah, that would be.
I was like, you're too young. She's a bad parent. That was bad. So this wasn't Pulp Fiction. You'll be fine.
Here's some more ammo for you guys to like tell me I'm a horrible white male. I remember seeing, what was it called? The Rocky Horror Picture Show. Mm-hmm. Me and my family went to my parents' friend's house or whatever, and they're like, put a video on. And
you watched Rocky Horror? That's brilliant.
And yeah, I just remember just like the scene where Tim Curry like goes and has sex with the lady character and then hops over to the guy character and just being like, what? What's going on? I don't understand. Like, this is incomprehensible. Like, and it just made me feel really weird. It was like, oh, I don't know what's going on here, but it's not right.
Yeah. See, this is why they should have Tim Curry having sex with people in Disney Pixar films, so it's not weird when you accidentally come across it in Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
Tim Curry. Yeah.
Tim Curry
particularly Tim Curry.
The only Disney film I think... He has been in 2 Disney films that I can think of. He was the villain
in Muppet Treasure
Island, and he was also the villain in one of the Beauty and the Beast sequels. And I think he played like an organ, evil organ, which you know, an organ
who has sex with Belle. I know.
So okay, this is of course a body swap podcast that we do. We always forget about that. What do we think of this as a body swap? I mean, we definitely get the stock standard scene where the person wakes up and doesn't realize
and
that
goes to the toilet
goes to the toilet and doesn't realize until they look in the mirror that they've actually swapped. There's always some mishap with the toilet itself. This time their foot gets trapped in the toilet. Did we enjoy this scene? Did we think it added anything to the thousands of times we've seen this scene before?
Has there been one that's been an allegory for getting your period for the first time before? Because that's what this one was. The whole
I'd have to reanalyze it. The ones we've watched, there may have been. I don't think so.
I mean, if there's anything that makes a great body swap film, it's that it's got a very strong metaphor. Like it can be the metaphor of, yes, she's getting her period for the first time. Or it can be the metaphor of like just her emotions being out of check. It's different with her mum. I certainly remember what I was like with my parents when I was going through my teenage years, with my mum in particular, versus what I was like and how close I was to my friends. Even that particular adolescent anger, which is really a big part of the panda transformation, particularly with her mum. There's like 2 versions of her panda. There's the one that doesn't have the markings on the shoulders and the one that does, and the red eyes and stuff, and that's the angry one that comes out when she like attacks Tyler at the party and stuff. Like, that's a very specific part. So I really like the metaphor. I guess it fits into like a werewolf or like Shaggy Dog style of one where the transformation's happening either out of control or in their control, but can switch back and forth. Is that a common one you guys come across?
Yeah, but the thing is with Shaggy Dog, it's really random. Like, it never happens for any reason except that the plot needs
it. It's not, or something. Yeah.
It's not tied to a specific theme or idea as well as this is, yeah.
No, that was definitely one of our criticisms of Shaggy Dog, is how random and arbitrary all the swaps were in that film. Whereas this, they all had purpose. And yeah, I do agree, like, the
allegory and the metaphor of the like the swaps, like there was thought behind them, which is something that we definitely criticize a lot of the movies we watch, like that there's no point or thought into anything.
And look, you can't compare this with any of the films I'm about to mention, but we've dealt with swap films that have like talked about periods before, and usually like it ends with like them getting period blood on their face and all over the walls, and it's like The Shining. So this was, I really did appreciate the depiction of, you know, just like it being pretty chill.
Do you reckon there was an original draft of this script where that does happen?
Well, this one does end with a stadium being destroyed. Like, isn't that like a part of the allegory? It's like,
what? No? What are you suggesting?
Yeah, what are you suggesting? I'm going to fucking kill you, President.
That her mom finally got a huge period and like ruined the stadium, is that what you're saying? I don't understand.
Yeah. Did I miss something?
I think you might have.
So what do we think of the whole like boy band subplot? Their obsession with the boy band and as a big driver of the plot.
Go on, Lucy, you go. Sorry.
Oh, well, I was just thinking when I was 13, I was like past boy bands. I was like ready to give myself to Daniel Jones from Silverchair or something like that. So I didn't quite gel with the boy band factor. I was into more like dangerous guys. But
you were like saving up for the Leonard Cohen concert when you were 13.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I mean, it probably would have been Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to go to concerts when I was 13, so I never had that really experience until I was a bit older.
I think my first concert was John Farnham, so I don't really think that's quite in the same league as NSYNC or Backstreet Boys. But I think again, like the panda metaphor, it's like, yes, this is sort of a thing that teenage girls in the early 2000s or late 90s might be into. But just like, okay, if boy bands aren't your thing, then if you just supplement the same thing for you, what were you obsessed with? Fucking, I had a diary at school that had a countdown to the Lord of the Rings films coming out and the Matrix films and shit coming out. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, every day it would be like the next number. I'd cross it off each day. Like, you was something you were obsessed with. Absolutely. And would go out of your way to do. Everyone has it. So it's not boy bands. Just think of what it was for you.
This was lost on like modern generations because they did focus on such a like nostalgic.
Like, I wondered that whether our generation.
Choice? Why was the choice to do it? Set it.
The director is of that.
Like,
sort of
it
era.
Was refreshing that it wasn't about like TikTok, you know, stars and flossing and shit.
But like that being said, like this could have easily been like you could easily have set this now and made it about like BTS or K-pop band.
I was definitely thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it is set this way mostly because the director, this is her experience and sort of very much reflective of that and the era that she was a teenager. And it seems to be a bit of a trend at the moment. The 90s, early 2000s is becoming like a period to explore a lot. Pen 15, which shares some DNA in terms of like awkward teen years and troubles
One of the pictures at the beginning where they were showing the pictures of her growing up, she had the same haircut as the girl in Pen 15.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even like that generational trauma, second generation Asian Canadian in this case, Asian American in Pen 15. Like there is that definitely a current trend in storytelling.
But I feel like with Pen 15, like they made it about the time they were growing up and it was for like that is 100% my age, like the same year that they were in high school. Like that was me. So it was all like the witchcraft, all of it.
Sure.
Like with this film, I'm assuming that they wanted younger people to watch it. Like, do young people know what Tamagotchis are? Like, I feel like the director might have had to fight for setting it in that time.
Possibly, yeah.
They were just like, no, do what you want. We just won't show it to anyone.
Yeah.
We'll just put on.
Maybe
you're not getting a cinema release.
I mean, this has always been a thing, though. Like, when we grew up, there were plenty of films set in the 70s and, like, you know, Dazed and Confused was, you know, not of its time, and films like Dick with Kirsten Dunst and all those kind
of
things.
But I wasn't watching Dazed and Confused at 7 or 8, you know what I mean?
But I guess I would rather the director tells an authentic something that they're familiar with authentically, and it doesn't feel like old people trying to be cool and hip and young. Do you know what I mean?
Totally,
like,
yeah.
I think,
like,
again,
when Brendan said floss before.
Like. exactly like that. And when I mentioned BTS, like, yeah. I've listened to one of their songs. Yeah, exactly right. Like, that's, I'd rather that. And also, it's probably worth remembering that I think Pixar is a brand on its own that started in 1995 with Toy Story. People who were kids when Toy Story came out now are our age. And so this was, like, for them, it's, like, very familiar as well. I don't think kids will have a problem with this.
And it's kind of just refreshing to watch a film about kids where they're not just constantly looking at their phones. Like, I feel like you watch most films and it's just a whole bunch of scenes of people looking at their phones.
It's always that texting graphic on the screen now that every film has to have, because that's how people communicate. Yeah. Rather than,
I really have something to say, but I have to save it for tenuous, but, like, I'm dying inside and no one's allowed to guess.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not always a bad thing, like, the focus on technology that films seem to have. Like, last year we got Mitchells versus the Machines, which was fantastic.
But comparable for me, these two movies, they're great.
Yeah, but then last year we also got Ron's Gone Wrong, which is, like, almost the same film, but just
fucking shit. Are
you making
things up? What are you talking about? You're saying a lot of words I don't understand.
So Mitchells versus the Machines.
Wrong's Gone Wrong? What?
Mitchells versus the Machines is a great animated film from last year that you should watch on Netflix.
Sure.
And
which is about an, like, father-daughter relationship rather than mother-daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brendan, you should have made fun of me here. I just made fun of you for, like, not understanding. Like, talking about the floss or whatever. I'm not cool either. Yeah.
So, Brendan, will you show Turning Red to your child when it arrives? Like, the day it arrives?
Yes. Yeah. It will be on in the delivery room. It'll help Katrina, like, have, instead of epidurals, we'll go Turning Red.
Yeah. Does anyone else have any notes that they want to mention before we go to the next thing?
I just quickly want to talk about, I love cooking montages, and I just love all the food looked so good in this. It made me just really hungry, and I loved it. And it's,
That was, like, the other thing I thought of when you were saying, like, Japanese influence. Whenever you watch a Japanese anime and they're doing food.
So good.
Yeah.
The father's cooking.
Yeah.
That scene of May's dad cooking was amazing. Then for me, it was the way they used the anime style when they did. Like, the facial expressions, the big eyes when they're emotional about something, the way the tears came out, all that stuff was amazing. But then also things like more Dragon Ball Z, Sailor Moon style, where, like, things would have that big energetic shine on them, or, like, when she's, like, jumping through the air and doing the panda thing and past the moon.
Yeah.
And all of that was so fucking cool in anime as well.
So can I just ask another question? Like, was Tyler, like, a you in high school, Paul?
What?
Don't say gay.
He's such a Tyler.
Were you, like, with the girls at the concert? Like,
well, I went to an all-boys school, so I never got to have that experience of being in the girl group.
Mm.
But I think the film was inferring that he was gay by the end. And it might have been one of those Disney edits.
Wait, what did I miss that inferred that
he was gay?
Just because he was so into the boy band.
And
I disagree with that.
He was kind of, like, lusting after the guys, right? Like,
Yeah. No straight guy has a favorite member of a boy band.
You should talk to my brother, who's obsessed with Five. Like,
really?
Yeah. Obsessed with Five.
And Five was definitely a band I was thinking about a lot when I was watching this film. Because obviously,
Four Town,
even though it's got five members.
Yeah.
Did your brother ever have a favorite member of Five?
I imagine so. I mean, we can ask him. We can get him live on here if you want. I'll down to the Google Meet.
I have a favorite Ninja Turtle.
True.
It's not the same.
I can certainly see that read. I think it's a completely valid read. I don't think it necessarily needs to be that way, though.
And we need to, like, make a world where boys can listen to whatever music they want. My son loves Dolly Parton, so, you know, that's what it is.
Smart kid.
Which is his favorite member of
I am just asking you, the left one. I don't know. wow, that might have been the funniest thing I've ever
that's
said.
The best joke you've ever done.
But I just meant like, were you a Tyler in high school? I forgot you went to an all boys school, so I guess that kind of takes care of that. But
what if you were obsessed with the Spice Girls? Is that the same sort of thing?
I was obsessed with the Spice Girls.
Because I had both albums, I had the movie, I had the live concert.
I mean,
on VHS.
I think because they were quite sexual at times,
sure,
you could get away with that without being,
because there was a friend in primary school who definitely turned out to be gay, and he was obsessed with the Spice Girls too, and he was the only guy I knew who was. He had like platform shoes and everything, though. He went a whole other level more than I did.
Oh, my God. I wanted platforms so badly because of Spice Girls, and my mum wouldn't let me.
Which was your favorite Spice Girl?
No, 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 no. We'll say it, and you tell us which one it is. Wait, all right. Give me 5 minutes.
What? Hold on. Are you guessing my favorite, or are we all saying
Let me
favorite?
Just look up the Spice Girls so I can see which ones are which.
I'm confused. Sorry. Is the assignment we're all going to say our favorite Spice Girl? Or
no, it's Brendan's going to match us to our Spice Girl.
Oh, am I? I Brendan's thought we were all going to guess who Brod's favorite was.
That's what that I wasn't sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Wait, we can do everyone.
Which one is it?
We can fill this out for 20 minutes.
content, Paul.
I'm thinking.
Wait, I still haven't got a list of who's who.
Victoria.
I can tell you. Wait, there's Posh Spice. Baby, Posh, Ginger, Scary, and Sporty.
Yeah, but I need pictures to put them to.
Maybe so Ginger. I'm changing my answer. Ginger.
All right. Your favorite was Sporty.
And I'm going to guess Posh Spice because Posh Spice was my favorite when I was growing up.
Lucy?
I'm guessing Ginger.
He was 100% Ginger.
Ginger.
Yeah, 100%. Yes, still I knew
is,
it.
Still
I
is
felt
to this
it.
Day. Jerry, all the it. Way.
Yeah, she was the best, sorry, ahead of her time. And also, really? Sporty totally predicted, like, the activewear trend.
She was way ahead of it.
Yes, absolutely.
I was always a baby.
Yeah, same here, Baby
so
Spice.
So was Liam. Interesting.
For sure.
What does it say baby about Spice. Me that I thought Posh Spice was the best?
She's very sultry.
She's quite attractive, Victoria. But
and
no,
just she didn't sing, so that's why she just did this.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't about talent.
I have a weakness for redheads. It's as simple as that. In fact, no wonder I like this film. It's about a red panda.
It's in the bag. What's the point of getting to the concert if you're too exhausted to enjoy it? Now take a break and help me appreciate some boys.
Okay, okay, okay.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's up?
Whoa, looking good.
Nice cat.
Are you a triangle? Because you were cute.
That was so weird.
So after that diversion into who's the hottest Spice Girl, let's go into how attractive we found the cast.
Perfect
now
segue.
It's time for Hot or Not. Take it away, Lucy.
But you're going to sing it like a boy band.
I'm not doing it. Are they a toot or a boot? Are they ugly or cute? Tell me, are they hot or not?
Ding. Ding.
Everyone is beautiful in their own way.
Ugh. With four.
All right. So obviously a lot of these are going to be friend or foes. But let's start with some hot or nots. So Sandra Oh as Ming, the mum.
Hot.
Yeah, hot. Kind of like in a real uptight way, but just like I love Sandra Oh and just that the instant like I heard her voice, I just, yeah. She was a hot mum.
I love Sandra Oh, but the shoulder pads and the...
What's your problem?
But do you know what I feel like she would be?
Her character was just maddening. Like, I just got frustrated anytime she was on screen. Like,
but do you know what I feel like she'd be like, Brendan? I feel like she, at the end of a long day, would like let her hair down and like kick off her shoes and like unbutton her shirt a little bit and like the mask would drop a little bit and you know.
The bit
we saw the red panda underneath.
the bit where she takes her shoes off and starts running. Without her shoes, yeah. Then you see her. I just wish we got to see her more with red hair. Ken, wow.
It all comes back to Jerry.
Now we know why you like this movie.
I'm going to give her a nod just because of the convenience store scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I could never forgive her for that. If
that was
unforgivable.
We need to talk about Devon, though.
Yeah.
The convenience store guy. Yeah, so my major crush when I was maybe more in primary school was Devon Sawyer. So just like the minute she was like lusting after a guy called Devon, I just was like, ah, oh, those were the days.
Devon Sawyer. Sorry, I just need to.
Now and then. Now and then, dude.
Now.
Final Destination, Casper. Fuck.
Oh, Casper. Oh, that guy. Yeah, okay. Oh, now we know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's cute.
All right,
Christina
so,
Ricci was in that film too, which is always helpful. Yeah,
yeah, sorry, and they got it on those two.
Yeah.
All right, so let's do some friend or foes. Rosalie Chang as Mi Lin, the main character.
Her whole crew, yes, she was
framed
cool.
All of them.
Yeah, and her whole crew, yeah, just I loved them.
I've seen a lot of criticisms from people who didn't like the movie, who wasn't their energy or whatever. And okay, sure, it wasn't for you. That they found her annoying. I really didn't find her annoying or irritating at all. I actually found I really like that. I think too many times we see that sort of character in a film and they are made out to be annoying because she could be particularly pretentious or really irritating in how sort of uptight and confident stuff she is. But I just thought she was cool. Like, yeah. I really enjoyed how enthusiastic she was about her friends and how much she loved Four Town and that the film was unabashedly on her side. I was too.
Mm. Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, when I started watching it, because it from the get go, it's all
takes
about,
off.
Yeah,
takes off.
It's that bombastic personality. It wasn't until I got the context of the mother, and that got a little deeper, and mm-hmm. I like saw dimensions. Is when I actually mm-hmm. really liked her. You know what I mean?
Because mm-hmm. totally.
When you saw her like having to hold that facade of like pleasing her mother and stuff, I was like, oh yeah, they've actually given her more dimensions than just being a kooky thing that moves really fast, which I find really irritating with most
sure.
cartoons.
So are we just going to give her whole friendship group a friend?
Yeah. I loved that.
All was of so them supportive. Except the one who was like afraid she was going to punch me.
you need a friend like that.
No, the rest had enough energy. She was like, she was a danger to have around.
But she was so, like, the fact that she got so excited when she saw May as a panda and she just wanted to hug her so bad. Like,
and so disappointed yeah, exactly. when she was able to get, well, she wasn't able to get her turned to a panda when she punched her. She's, like, super supportive but with a sad face. It was like.
Did you know that Priya was played by May Trey Ramakrishnan, the main actress from Never Have I Ever?
Yeah,
yeah. Because I follow Mindy Kaling on Instagram and she shouted her out and did like a few posts about this movie.
Never Have I Ever.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
You actually will really like it, Brendan.
It was good for one season, Brendan. It was good for one season.
I think you can... Boo. No. I think you can...
Season two is great.
I think you can... Hey, I might not have a podcast about watching TV, but TV is my one true love, okay?
You have to have you as a guest soon, Lucy. Okay.
You can draw parallels to Never Have I Ever. That's for like sure. about a horny teenage girl that, you know, you don't really see that character a lot.
With her who is also like a second generation overbearing mother. Yeah, totally. It's all there. The same thing. Actually, might have been one of my tenuous recommendations.
Mm.
Oh, no.
And let's finish with one last hot or not. Wei Ching Ho as Grandma.
Yeah. She was like a silver fox. I can't remember what color her hair was. I think she was kind of.
Yeah.
I can see that.
With that cool scar.
Yeah.
Hold on. How can this last one? We've got to go through the dad first, the most supportive dad ever. He was amazing.
So supportive?
No, the whole time. He was the best. He was the one who, like, helped to talk her. Like, he was the one that told Ming that she needed to tell May about the whole panda thing. He was the one who, like, convinced her that she should keep it if she wanted to. Like, he was a super supportive dad. He was just... He was overshadowed by Ming, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Ming was so overbearing that he had to find his little moments to like get in there and help.
And
stuff.
That's sometimes you don't need to be like the cool dad who's like, you know, always like joking and laughing. Like sometimes you can just sweep in and kind of silent bobber and just like a few lines here and there and just say all the right things and still be a great dad.
He also cooked like a boss.
Oh my God, the cooking, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes him hot, material. Actually. Exactly.
Thank you. Exactly. And you haven't discussed any of the members of Four Town. Like...
Oh, yeah.
On your own podcast.
Literally, the object of these girls' desire, let's not rate them how hot they are.
That would be crude.
Yeah. So just so you know, like Jordan Fisher, who you might know from To All the Boys I Loved Before, too, was Robert.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Phineas O'Connor was Jesse, who's Billie Eilish's brother in real life.
Yep.
The other three I've never seen before. Topher Noe as Aaron T, Josh Levi as Aaron Z. I do love that there was two Aarons. That's so, like, such a boy band thing.
Mel B, Mel C.
Yeah. And Grayson Villanueva as Tae Young.
I think it's easy to do as collective. I don't think individually it's going to make much difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I think they nailed the brief.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dreamy eyes when the wings come out during that.
And you know the way as well, kind of like the BTS guys, they're sort of like gentle and svelte. They're not like overbearing and, you know, like Mark Wahlberg. It's like, I don't know where to look.
I'm looking at a photo of all of them and I'm trying to figure out who the bad boy is, but I look like I could beat all of them.
My mom cuts his hair at the salon, and I felt it. It's very soft.
Whoa, can I have some?
Yeah, Abby, hook his sister up. Ew, he looks like a hobo.
A hot hobo.
May I remind you what real men look like?
Fortown.
Yes, Fortown!
Now it's time for Opinion Swap, where we find some entertaining reviews of Turning Red from across the interwebs. So this one's from 24 Frames of Nick on Letterboxd. He gives it 3.5 stars. And they say, periods in my Disney movie? This is outrageous.
Boom.
Wait, what did they rate it?
What was the star rating?
3.5.
3.5.
So I think they've been
That's a solid
I think
movie.
They actually liked it. All right, this one's from West 10, who gives it 5 stars, and this entire review is in caps, and it says, I want to touch the fur. I know exactly what it would feel like. Just makes too much sense. I want to touch the fur.
Ooh, jeez. we know definitely what it's like to make something and awaken a subculture that you knew nothing about. So,
I mean, the last scene with May definitely made some furries happy when she had the ears and the tail and stuff like that. Like,
oh,
that's definitely where she's heading.
All right. This one's from James on Letterboxd, and they gave it 4 stars. And they said, Miriam talking about boys while wearing that gay ass outfit. Give it a few years, girly. And I definitely did think that she was giving out lesbian vibes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
wasn't that just like, you know, the cool grunge girl? Like,
yeah.
She did seem super cool.
There's a couple of things like that in this film. Again, this is where you wonder if Disney's cut some stuff out. There was some people were picking up on the Miriam and May vibe. And like when Ming says, like, that girl's odd, felt that was like a little bit queer coded.
But I think she's bi, by the way.
Cool, yeah, I think that's fair to say as well.
Yeah.
But there was another bit with Priya I think it's Priya is the name of the character. When they're at the party and she starts dancing with the goth girl and they're all like going woo woo woo, and then the three friends who are left all start making this face like, what about that, nudge each other like she's really into this girl. So there's a couple little things like that actually in the film as well. It's very, very quick, but a lot of people picked up on it.
Well, you know, I'm looking forward to a time where it doesn't have to be
fucking
really subtle things that you have to pick up on.
Absolutely.
All right. This one's from Kylo Ren on Letterboxd.
The Kylo Ren.
Yeah. And they say, this isn't very realistic. Girls don't typically turn into pandas. I don't think. I don't ever talk to a girl ever, so I'm not sure. But I don't think so. So if Pixar can edit this to fix that issue, that would be nice. It was all fun and games with the talking cars and monsters, but this just isn't realistic. Also, people are usually not computer animated, so fix that too. And finally, we have a 3-star review from Barracuda on Letterboxd who says, I suppose you could classify this as a period piece.
I wish I thought
of that. Well done. There was actually one piece of criticism I was wondering if you guys agreed with or not, because some people suggested the film like encourages children to be like rude to their parents, like the film is saying that May, by not just being a rebel but like yelling at and fighting with her mum, was like part of was like celebrated in some way.
But I feel like it was really grown up in that it showed you that adults make mistakes and that there will be a time when you find out that your parents aren't perfect and that they're just human beings. And I quite like that they explored that theme.
Yeah, I think that's the difference between the movie saying outright, yeah, May was right to yell at her mom, and the idea that like those conflicts happen in real life. That's part of being a teenager, and rather than fight it, maybe just understand it and try to be supportive of each other. Like at the end of the movie where she goes, you're not going out wearing that, and she says, my panda, my choice.
Yeah.
And then then they're like, the understanding moment is, I'll be home by dinner, sort of thing. Like, okay, we don't agree on everything, but we still love each other and can support each other.
And you know, that they say, like, which parent says the further you go, the prouder I'll be. I am worried about myself as a parent, like not letting go of my kid and letting them and you know, I read a nice quote that is, you know, you don't build a beautiful ship to keep it in the harbor. You have to, like, you grow up, your kid grows up, and the whole time you as the parent know that you have to, like, send them off. So I liked that it explored that theme.
Maybe she should have turned into a ship instead of a panda and people would have understood it.
Bye, Mom. Bye, Dad.
Hold on. You're not going out like that, are you?
My panda, my choice, Mom. I'll be back before dinner, okay?
Fine. Oh, you're welcome to join us.
For Mr. Lee's cooking? Yes!
Yeah. Don't load up on junk!
All right, let's get to tenuous recommendations, where we each recommend a piece of media that is linked to today's movie in some way. And a reminder, if you ever want to see a list of all the recommendations we have made on the show, head over to our Letterboxd page, which is linked on our website. Now, this is my podcast, so I'm going to break the rules today and recommend two.
I'm recommending two as well.
I'm going to play by the rules.
Can I go last?
Because I'm a good boy.
Okay, sure. All right, so I'm going to do the obvious one first. So I am going to recommend a movie that was obviously a influence on this one, which is the 1994 Studio Ghibli film Pompoko, which I think is not as widely seen as a lot of the other Studio Ghibli movies, but is definitely worth everyone's time. It's a movie about a bunch of magical shape-shifting raccoons who their forest is going to be destroyed, and it's their fight against all the humans to try to save their forest. So it's got raccoons that look very similar to May in this film. They also shapeshift from human to animal.
They're tanuki, then.
Probably the difference is that they also have giant inflatable ball sacks that allow them to
tanuki,
fly.
They're tanuki, yeah. Have you ever, in Japan, outside ryokans and stuff like that, they'll have statues of tanuki, and they have giant fucking ball sacks, all of them. It's amazing.
Wait. Yeah. Are they explained in the film as ball sacks, or is
that's
this
what they are? That is what they are. They're
very obviously ball sacks. Like,
you know the tanuki suit in Super Mario Brothers? It's anatomically incorrect because he doesn't have giant balls.
So this is a super charming movie, and even though
giant
it has
balls,
it's still, I'd say, kid appropriate, so one for the whole family, despite
periods.
The
exist, periods
I was gonna say. Exactly.
Get used to it.
But my other recommendation is a film that I watched this week and I absolutely fell in love with it. So I want to recommend it as well. And my connection is that it's also a period piece.
Is that
to
the connection?
A time period.
Okay.
No, right, shut up. it's a period piece to a time period that's also within my own lifetime. So this is like set in the late 90s, and this film was obviously set in 2002. And it's also a coming of age film. And it's a film called Dating Amber, which just premiered on Netflix over here. But I think it's everywhere. And I, especially Lucy, I think you would love this
film. I'm writing
film.
It down. Yep.
Yeah, so it's about it's set in Ireland in the 90s.
Amazing.
and it's about a gay kid and a lesbian kid who decide to pretend to be boyfriend and girlfriend so that all the bullies in the school will just leave them alone. And then all these complications happen from there. It's really beautiful, and it really encapsulates what it's like to be a closeted teenager in like a very, like I felt very like seen by this film, like my teenage self, especially the way that it kind of turns the gay kid into a bit of an asshole, and like he does a lot of awful things, and it really shows what, like how toxic being forced in the closet can be on someone. But it's also really funny at times.
I saw the trailer.
Emotional. And
cool. Is it a film or a series?
Yeah. It's a film. Cool. And it only goes for an hour and a half. Super easy watch. And it's available on Netflix everywhere. So Dating Amber, I really want everyone to see it.
Cool.
Very cool.
Lucy, what's yours?
So the first one I'm doing is The Diary of a Teenage Girl. Have I recommended that before?
No. Okay.
And has anyone seen it?
I've seen it.
Yes. Sounds familiar. I may have.
No.
So, you know, it's like The Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Like, the title's a bit, like, misleading or whatever. It's, it was a book, I'm pretty sure, which I haven't read, sorry. But it's got the chick from The King of Staten Island. You know that chick, Paul?
Yeah.
Help me out. What's her name? She plays, like, a 17-year-old, and it's fully about her sort of sexual, like, discovery. And it's set in the 70s, and even though, you know, I didn't grow up.
Belle Powley.
There you go.
Belle Powley.
Even though I didn't grow up in the 70s, still felt very like, you know, she's like, it was a real story. And a lot of it's inappropriate, but I guess it's, she has an affair with her mum's boyfriend. But really good movie, and definitely you don't see a lot of films from that perspective about that theme. So that's the first one.
Cool.
That's a great movie, and you should mention like the whole
Kristen
cast.
Kristen Wiig, Alexander Skarsgård, Christopher Sweetcheeks, Maloney.
And also, I went on the IMDb page. Have you guys seen Alexander Skarsgård's IMDb
picture? He has no pants on. I saw it when I was looking up this film, right? What is that?
Yeah. That is the most insane IMDb picture I've ever seen.
I'm not mad at it though, you know? Like.
Yeah, definitely. Love it.
And then my other one, and I also can't remember if I've ever recommended this before. I don't think I have, but it truly is one of the best films I've ever seen. And so I'm sure it's not going to surprise anyone. Can you guess what it is, Paul?
No.
I'm doing Eighth Grade.
Fuck.
Yay. I'm so glad I got to go first.
Was that yours as well, Brad?
It was on my list. Yeah.
You stole it.
Jinx,
you broke the rules and you stole it from our guest.
No, and this one had to go second because I, like, this movie is amazing. And you know the way we were talking about before about TikTok and all that stuff, and it's just like, ugh, gross, horrible. It's like this movie is fully set in that time.
Yeah.
She's got a YouTube channel and she throws up the Gucci symbol, and I've just never seen a movie like this before. I love it, and I think it should be, like, taught in schools. And I just loved it. I listened to a Bo Burnham interview where he talked about he just watched like hours and hours of teenagers, their YouTube channels, and that, you know, boys would talk about video games. Sorry, guys. And that teenage girls would talk about their souls, because I guess he was being asked, like, why did you choose to make this about a female? And that teenage girls talk
more
about
interesting.
Their souls. And I just, I just thought that it was amazing that, like, he found that story, like, that he wrote that. It's one of the best films I've ever seen. I watched it on a plane of all places, and I wept. Adrian was asleep, and I was like, yay, I can watch Eighth Grade. Adrian said he didn't want to watch it. And he woke up, like, while I was just, you know, like, blubbering. He's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, something's happening to me.
That happened to me. That happened to me when I watched Room, the Brie Larson film Room, on a plane. I got the halfway point of that film, I was a fucking mess on a plane, like an international flight. It was very awkward.
And I will stop in a minute. But I just think that thing of in high school, you know, you feel so lonely, even though everybody's going through the same thing. And it just does really well talking about mean girls and making friends and, like, taking chances and doing things when you're not ready for them. And I've just never seen a film like it. So 5 million stars. Love it.
Totally agree. I think we've all watched it and we all loved it.
Yeah.
So,
Brad, anything to add?
No, you go first, Brad.
Oh,
no. About
8th grade. Like,
no, you go.
Am I going now?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, the movie I'm choosing, I am so surprised Paul didn't recommend it, but listening to...
A little backstory. Last week, Brennan and I hung out and he's like, you know what I'm recommending. And I was like trying to guess it and I couldn't guess it. And then like a couple of nights ago, I was just sitting there and I'm like, oh, I know what it's going
to
do.
So
say it at the same time. Yeah.
Right. 3, 2, 1.
Red Rocket. Yeah.
There you go. NSYNC in the trailer.
Yeah.
We got Red in the title. This movie was so good, so hilarious, and also so miserable. If you haven't heard of it, it's this film.
Yeah, I'm Googling it now. What is it?
It's about this porn star who's sort of like on the run. He's washed up and he goes back to his hometown where everyone is just hating to see him and he's putting himself in their lives. And it's played by, what's his name?
Simon Rakes.
It's about a character that we've probably all met. The person who able to like push themselves and get away with everything. And it's just watch Red Rocket. It's awesome.
Yeah. And like Simon Rakes is absolutely robbed. He was by far the best actor in any film last year. And the fact that he wasn't even nominated is a fucking travesty. Like, this is one of those stories, you know, the guy that we all know from the scary movie films, just like fucking knocking it out of the park with this. It's actually really sad that he wasn't nominated because like through the whole award season, like people were hyping him up to be, and you could see in interviews like how much he wanted it. So I'm a bit crushed for him, but
yeah, I agree. And hearing like the backstory and putting that into context with what this film is. Yeah. I feel like it would have been one of those things that the Oscars eats up, which is a story. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like going from porn to being an actor, then playing a porno actor in a movie and then winning an Oscar.
Having porn like ruin your career and all of a sudden it being the redeeming thing, like, oh, well, fuck the Academy.
Yeah. All right, Brad, what's yours?
Did you say tenuous recommendation or torrent of recommendation? I'm here to occupy this podcast. Fight the power. Here we go. Bo Burnham's 8th Grade, already recommended by Lucy. Excellent film. Booksmart, a great film about sort of very book smart girls and sort of their experience through high school and then learning a bit about themselves along the way, which is definitely inspired by Superbad, which is a very authentic film about boys in high school. If you want to watch a film that's like got a really cool energy and visual sense, it's inspired by anime that's set in Toronto, watch Scott Pilgrim versus the World. If you want another animated film that's very cool animation, but also about like kids and their parents and their relationship with their parents, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, The Mitchells versus the Machines, and Kubo and the Two Strings are excellent options. TV shows that are really cool for the content they talk about, especially it relates to like growing up, like becoming an adult and puberty and stuff like that. Sex Education, you can watch our listener review of that, of the 3 seasons of that so far, and Hunting Seasons, and End of the Fucking World, particularly season 1. I think that's very cool as well. Master of None, if you want to have, there's a couple episodes there about like generational trauma and second generation Americans. Never Have I Ever, which was already mentioned earlier. And if you just want to hear more of Ludwig Göransson's amazing music, Community, the TV show, or his score for the movie Creed, which is one of my favorite films of all time, and of course The Mandalorian. That's my ton of recommendations.
Sorry, I missed that. Could you say that again?
Absolutely. So, starting with Bo Burnham's 8th Grade.
Let's go.
I've never met nobody like you. Had friends and I've had buddies.
It's true,
but they don't turn my tummy the way you do. I've never met nobody like you.
You're never not on my mind.
Oh my, I'm never not by your side, your side, your side. I'm never gonna let you cry. Oh, cry, don't cry. I'll never not be your ride or die. All right.
So if you head over to our website, you'll see that each of us has ranked every body swap film we have reviewed on the podcast. So my question is, where are we all going to put Turning Red on our lists? Now, Brod, you've got the shortest list of us all.
For this one.
So your list is what you've...
I can tell you my list so far. Before Turning Red, Heart and Soul, Your Name. Not that I reviewed Heart and Soul with you guys. I just like to put it up there. Heart and Soul, Your Name, because we've mentioned that before as well. Soul. Then the body swap episode of Community, body swap episode of Buffy, body swap episode of Futurama, body swap episode of Lizzie McGuire, Mama Boy, and then AI Love You at the bottom.
Did you like AI Love You less than Mama Boy?
I've already seen Mama Boy twice. I would never rewatch AI Love You. So I came to that realization when I put this list together the other day. Yes, AI Love You goes at the bottom of my list.
I didn't realize you had rewatched Mama Boy. When did that happen?
So I watched initially with Damask, and then I got Steph to watch it. I was like, you need to try this out too. And she had a good time with it. I am putting Turning Red at the top of my list. As I said, fucking love this film. Have watched it twice already. Have been listening to the soundtrack in my car nonstop. Again, Ludwig Göransson's incredible score. Everyone talks about Michael Giacchino at the moment because he's doing so much work. He's obviously the heir apparent to like John Williams and those sorts of composers. But Ludwig Göransson is like taking that stuff and then evolving it in a new direction. I think he's fucking awesome. Anyway, Turning Red's at the top of my list.
There you go.
Awesome. Lucy.
Oh, I don't want to go first. Second.
Okay.
Fuck me, right?
All right, I'll go second then. All right. I am gonna put this in between Heart and Souls and Soul. So
above Soul.
Yes. I like this more than Soul. So I'm gonna get a round of applause from me. I'm gonna put this sixth on my list. So Your Name, Freaky, Hot Chick, Being John Malkovich, Heart and Souls, and now Turning Red after that.
Beautiful.
And for me, I'm putting...
I can't wait to hear.
Turning Red.
I'm the Mama Boy.
Yes.
I'm building tension. I'm putting it between Big 1988 and Freaky Friday 1976.
Wow. Oh, that's still pretty good.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm putting it after 13 going on 30 and... No, sorry. I'm putting it after Soul and above 17 again. So, like, that's top 10, I think, still. Yeah. So, I think I liked Soul just a tiny bit more.
Well, I mean, I think you can safely say we're all recommending people watch it. 100%.
Yeah.
Brendan's like, one of those people who, like, he'll write a review that has, like, 3.5 stars, but then the review will be really negative. Like, I don't know. You like the movie?
I guess like there's a lot of things I like, but it doesn't make it exceptional. It just means I enjoyed myself. But I can't say more than that. Like, yeah.
What is life like going?
Is that bad?
Is that weird to go through life like that? That sounds really weird.
I can't fault a single thing about this dish. It was fine.
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
So last episode, Brod was on, and when he heard what we were doing this episode, he insisted on coming back.
Here
so
we
let's
go.
See,
let's see the if hat it trick.
Because I think you might be interested in this one. We've done a lot of new movies all in a row, so I thought it's time to go back to the 80s. 1980, to be
sometimes
exact.
It's great. For swap films, and sometimes it's real danger.
18 again, yeah.
So I've chosen a film from director Joe Camp, who is the mastermind behind the Benji franchise. I don't know if you guys are familiar with.
I'm not feeling it yet, Paul.
Bring
the heat up, please.
Are you guys familiar with the Benji movies?
I feel like I've heard that name, but I don't know why.
Is it about a dog?
Yeah, a series of movies about a dog.
It was a definite VHS release.
Yeah. He made a whole bunch of movies about Benji the dog, and this is the one outlier in his filmography. A 1980 comedy starring Chevy Chase, Jane Seymour, and Omar Sharif.
Oh, my God.
Called Oh Heavenly Dog, where a, mur- where a murdered detective must avenge his murder after he is reincarnated as a dog.
Rot-roll.
Do you say Chevy Chase is in this?
Yeah, hold on.
He is the star. Oh, yes.
Is he's the voice of the dog?
He is, or it's he's him until he gets murdered, and then he's the voice of the dog, yes.
I'm not requesting to be on the podcast. I've overstayed my welcome as it is. But I will be listening in to listen if it's any good or not, because that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a trash fire. But yeah. Well, I mean, it's another animal theme one to tie in with this, so I thought it'd be a good follow-up.
I'm looking at the poster, and we have a dog with a magnifying glass looking at a woman in a bathtub.
And there it is.
There we go.
The 80s.
All right. So thanks again, Brod, for coming on the show.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks for indulging me. You said Pixar movie, and I was like, gotta be there, buddy.
There is one more Pixar body swap in the back catalog, so we'll have to bring you back when we eventually do that. What's happening on your podcast?
Last week we released our review of Peacemaker Season 1. If you don't know Hunting Seasons, we review seasons of television. And the week after this one, I'm not sure when you release the episode, but the next one we're going to be doing is reviewing The After Party. This is a Lord and Miller TV show on Apple TV Plus. It's a murder mystery with an incredible cast. Spoilers, I had a really good time with it. I'm looking forward to discussing it
on the podcast.
Yeah, we're all watching, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. There, you don't even have to do the episode now.
That's it. Yeah, great. This is a bad pitch. I should have left it.
All right. So until next time, don't be a piece of shit on the ground, DPW, and review us on iTunes or Spotify. And I was Paul Mitzi.
I was Lizzie Thomas.
I was Brennan Levi.
And I was Broderick Gordis.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
The Swapcast podcast is recorded in Adelaide, Australia. It's hosted by Paul Mitzi and edited by Brendan Levi and Paul Mitzi. Our theme song was written and performed by John Marco of Two Creative, featuring Lucy Thomas, and recorded at Browntown Studios. Our music bumpers were created by Reggie Parker. Contact him on parkerregmusic@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.